You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Ireland has been renowned throughout its history for its traditions of song, storytelling, and mythology, but in the late 19th century, a single poet was largely responsible for revitalizing the Irish literary tradition at a time when the independence movement was just gaining steam. That poet is William Butler Yeats, whose 150th birthday is being celebrated this coming Monday, June 8th, at this year's Irish Repertory Theatre's gala event. Yeats, the celebration, which will be hosted by Matthew Broderick and Sarah Jessica Parker and will include readings by many Irish and Irish-American luminaries, including novelist Colin McCann, who joins us now, along with Matthew Broderick. Welcome back, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Matthew, how did the idea for this event come about? Is this a typical Irish rep gala?
I'm not sure how it came about. I've always loved the Irish rep. They see practically everything they do. It's a wonderful theater. And so they asked Sarah and me to host this year. And I don't really know much about how it came about, to be honest.
So you were kind of stuck with Yeats?
I thought it was a nice opportunity to learn about. I don't know much about Yeats. So it seemed like at the very least I would learn something. And I get to meet I was very happy to meet you
He's going to get to be quoting Yeats now for the rest of the summer. When you go to Ireland, you'll be quoting them all over the place.
Yeah,
right?
No, I'm gonna,
because
gonna
there are plenty of things to quote.
Yeah, and I'll be pretty much the ranking expert by then, I imagine.
Have you performed any O'Casey, Singh, Shaw, Beckett?
No, I'm supremely unqualified for this Monday.
Now, what about you, Colm? You're not a poet. You began your career as a journalist. Yeah. Did you feel that you had the touch of the poet in you?
I think everyone has a touch of the poet in them. In fact, I don't make too much of a difference between journalism or prose or poetry. I think the well-placed word is what we're all after. And I think, you know, because this is the 150th anniversary of Yeats's birth, there are things all over the world celebrating Yeats. But really, the Irish Reps kick off next Monday night. That's going to be one of the big ones, certainly in New York.
I mentioned A Touch of the Poet because Gabriel Byrne will be one of the readers as well, and he was in the last revival of that great O'Neill play. Mm-hmm. People, when you speak to Irish writers, they always say James Joyce. Is Yeats another one that always comes to mind?
Sure.
O'Casey, Joyce?
Yeah, Yeats, O'Casey, Shaw, Joyce. I mean, Yeats was the first Irishman of four to win the Nobel Prize, and probably one that your mother would most like to bring home, because I'm not sure your mother would be happy if James Joyce arrived on the doorstep, and maybe not Shaw. Obviously Mr. Heaney, everybody would want Mr. Heaney, but when I was growing up in school in Dublin, we had to learn a lot of the Yeats poems off by heart, and a central figure in the national theatre, in the national imagination.
Well, he also was a playwright.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You haven't performed any Yeats either, have you, Matthew?
No, I haven't.
Have you looked at the plays?
A little bit, yeah. And I've spent a lot of time in Ireland, and it's unavoidable to some degree. Yeah, and he's buried, or maybe buried, right opposite where we live. So I look at Ben Bulbin, where he's resting down there.
Cast a cold eye on life, on death, horseman pass by. That's the inscription, I believe, on the gravestone.
Yeah.
How much can you still recite by heart? Do you remember all the things you had to learn when you were in school?
Bits and pieces. I was out there this morning thinking, can I remember An Irish Airman Foresees His Death, which is one of my favorite poems. So I'm going to try to do it off by heart next Monday.
Uh-huh. Are you going to give us a little taste of one of the things? Will you be
sure.
reading, or will you also be singing? Because in listening to Yeats read his poetry, he kind of sings it.
Well, that's, you know, my friends say to me that I do sing, but I can't, so I won't. But I'll give you the first four lines of An Irish Airman Foresees His Death. I know that I shall meet my fate somewhere among the clouds above. Those that I fight, I do not hate. Those that I guard, I do not love. And I could go on, but...
Wow.
And
it's a beautiful
rhyming poem. At a time when you didn't have to rhyme anymore.
Well, you know, and what's interesting about Yeats is he uses all these beautiful, complicated rhymes. He's a modernist poet at a time, but he was very well aware of structure and beauty and language. And you know, he had there's a number of different types of Yeats. There's the, you know, the experimental one. There's the traditional one. There's the one who embraces no theater in Japan. And he's a complicated man with a complicated story behind him.
And Matthew, one of those rare writers who actually produced great work after he won the Nobel Prize. You see, that's a sign you've got to go into decline.
That's good. So you don't have to decline after your Nobel Prize.
That's right.
Good news.
Now, Colm, you also lived in Japan. Did you see any Yeats in? Well, you said he was influenced by no theater.
Yeah, he was influenced by no theater. He was profoundly, interested in spiritualism and, you know, in all sorts of. Even had seances and things like that. And then towards the end of his life, when the work got deeper, just like Matthew said, you know, after the Nobel Prize, he had another spurt of life, and he had a sort of a fidelity, I suppose, to a number of different ways of seeing, which is really spectacular for a poet. So you can look at him in all sorts of ways. You can think of him as a poet of legends. You can think of him as a poet of the intellect, and he's very interested in the soul and in dying and what happens to us at the end of it all. I suppose everybody's great question.
Yeah.
Although it is said that at the end of his life he shared sympathy for fascism with his friend Ezra Pound.
Yeah.
And he died in France in 1939.
He died in France, and he liked Mussolini. But, you know, everybody's complicated, and we have to remember the politics of the time. I wouldn't make it so easy that he was a fascist. He did write some things for the Irish Blue Shirts and so on, but he got a bit disenchanted by the quote-unquote masses. Still and all, I think he was a poet of the people. He was a poet of the nation. And in fact, he was given the Nobel Prize at that early time, really because Ireland had come out from under the yoke of colonialism. It was more an award to Ireland than to Yeats himself.
It's interesting that Yeats was in the minority. He was a Protestant, but he was able to speak for what was becoming a predominantly Catholic nation. And in a country that could be polarized, he was just accepted by everyone.
Yeah, it seems that's true, isn't it?
Still true.
He's talked about everywhere.
I mean, I remember a friend of mine said he was Protestant, but that's not his fault.
Nobody's perfect, right?
But he looked at Catholic Ireland, and he warned as a senator in the 20s. He warned the country. He said, if we become too predominantly Catholic, this country will never come together. And what's interesting is you think about recent events in Ireland and the vote on gay marriage. I think that if Yeats were able to come back and came back last week, he would be very happy now with the way the country has turned and the more secular nature of how we're approaching things. I think he was a man ahead of his time.
I'm talking with Colin McCann and Matthew Broderick about a celebration of William Butler Yeats, his 150th birthday. What is the exact date? Do we know?
I think it's June 13th.
Coming up very soon. It will be celebrated as part of the gala for the Irish Repertory Theatre coming up this Monday at the Town Hall on West 43rd Street. Matthew Broderick and Sarah Jessica Parker will be the hosts, and a lot of interesting writers. We'll find out about a few, not just writers, luminaries, should we say, will be reading from Yeats.
Yes, and there's dance and music, all sorts of things.
And we'll be back with more. Matthew, you'll be reading something for us?
So they tell me.
Okay. Well, we'll see whether you actually do it or not after this.
I will arise and go now, and go to Innisfree, and a small cabin build there of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honeybee, and live alone in the bee-loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the vales of the morning to where the crickets sing. There midnight's all a glimmer, and noon a purple glow, and evening full of the linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always, night and day, I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore, while I stand on the roadway or on the pavement's grey. I hear it in the deep heart's core.
William Butler Yeats reading his most famous poem, The Isle of Innisfree. And he actually introduced that by in that recording by saying, I'm going to read this because it's my most famous poem. It's the one that everybody knows. But he wrote in Ireland, I would imagine, there are a lot of poems that are considered his most famous poem.
Sure. He sounds a little bit there like he was at the laudanum or the chloroform earlier. In Ireland, poems like Stolen Child or Sailing to Byzantium, they're sort of iconic in so many ways. It's interesting even that I think that after Shakespeare, there are probably more literary books named from Yeats poems. Certainly say No Country for Old Men by Cormac McCarthy, Things Fall Apart, Chinua Achebe, A Fanatic Heart, which is Edna O'Brien, Philip Roth's The Dying Animal, Stolen Child, and so on. People take great inspiration from him. It's almost like you can magpie from Yeats.
If I ever write a novel, I better go look through my Yeats.
There you go.
To find a title.
There you go.
But that is a suggestion. That suggests that he wrote memorable lines, phrases. About the evening, Yeats, the celebration, there it's going to be directed by Charlotte Moore with musical directed by John Bell. What kind of music?
I don't know, actually, what kind of music. I know the Irish Rep and what a wonderful place it is. Honestly, I see everything they do, and I think it's one of the best theaters in the city. Everything's good there. So that's why I got involved, but I don't know that much about what's happening Monday.
They'll be doing Yeats songs. I mean, a lot of Yeats lends himself to the music, you know. Well, all good poetry should and does. But I think when musicians hear it, they think, okay, I want to capture the music that comes in under that. It's sort of the unheard music. So there'll be a lot of people doing music and dance and poems and all sorts of other shenanigans at the time. It's interesting that it comes up close to Bloomsday too, because Bloomsday, which is June 16th, James Joyce's day, seems to me to be the thinking man's St. Patrick's Day. Right? And so maybe from here on in we'll have a Yeats Day and a Bloom's Day, and we'll get away from our old cliche of slopping along in our drunken Wellingtons on Fifth Avenue or something.
There is an American connection in an odd way. His father came here. His father was a painter,
right,
who I understand unfortunately preferred his other son, Jack Butler Yeats, also an artist, over his very great poet son. But his father came here and is buried in Chestertown, New York.
Is Jack the brother or the father? Are they both?
Well,
they're
both
John and Jack. Yeah.
John and Jack. Uh-huh. It's the same.
Right. I've seen some of the paintings.
The paintings are incredible. I mean, Jack Yeats is considered and increasingly so as the years go on, like one of the great painters to ever come out of Ireland.
In your case, Matthew, your mother was a really wonderful painter. Is that, did you grow up looking at this kind of art?
We also, from the time I was a kid, we spent some time in Ireland, and I remember Is it called the National Gallery there? In
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we saw several of those paintings. That's why I couldn't remember if it was Jack or John, but the father, right? I mean,
it's both, actually.
Yeah.
John was the father, Jack was the son.
Yeah.
Right.
And you are going to read something for us?
I am going to read something for you, yep. Do you want me to now?
Please.
Are we ready for that? When you are old and gray and full of sleep and nodding by the fire, take down this book and slowly read and dream of the soft look your eyes had once and of their shadows deep. How many loved your moments of glad grace and loved your beauty with love false or true? But one man loved the pilgrim soul in you and loved the sorrows of your changing face. And bending down beside the glowing bars, murmur a little sadly how love fled and paced upon the mountains overhead and hid his face amid a crowd of stars.
Beautiful.
And read by an actor who really knows how to deliver the words well. Thank you so much, Matthew, for that. We are talking about Yeats, the celebration, this year's gala benefit production for the Irish Repertory Theatre. And it's the 150th anniversary of the birth of the Nobel Prize-winning poet William Butler Yeats, featuring performances by Gabriel Byrne, Melissa Errico, Peter Gallagher, Bridget Moynihan, John Slattery, J. Smith Cameron, Colm McCann. You're one of the few non-actors in this group, Colm.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a ham.
Are you the official? You and Colm Choi being the official Irish New Yorkers?
Yeah, we're the official Irish hams, actually. so we get away with it. I'd love to be able to be an actor. I think a lot of actors want to be writers, and a lot
of writers
want to be actors. Why is that?
I don't know, but you are an actor. Your book, you can write of things that you shouldn't know about, like New York in the 70s so beautifully.
Oh, thank you.
And you said that's acting.
Yeah, I think it's a form of acting, you know, trying to understand other, but it's also a form of sort of deep empathy towards mm-hmm. others.
And getting into characters.
Yeah.
I've spoken to writers and actors about this and writers and actors who have written, and they say that in the end it's kind of like when they're writing a character, it's kind of like what they do when they're developing a character. They come up with a backstory often. Mm-hmm. They have to make it into a rounded person, and they do the same thing when they're writing.
I'll never forget working on a character in one of my novels. She's a 38-year-old prostitute in the South Bronx, and I'm sitting in my room and I'm writing away, and a note is slipped in under the door, and it was my daughter saying, come on, Dad, let's go play soccer in Central Park. And I remember thinking distinctly, give me four, because in my character's head, because right now I'm turning a trick under the Major Deegan Bridge.
Now, Matthew, you have been in It's Only a Play by Terrence McNally for 7 months or so?
I think more like nine.
Well, it was nice being in a hit.
It was wonderful.
But you're closing on Sunday.
We close Sunday, yeah. We have five more shows. But it's been a real pleasure. And it's been long, but good. We have Nathan Lane back. We had Martin Short for a while.
So either way, you can't go
either way
wrong.
was wonderful. And
but
I've
do you have to adjust as an actor because they have very different styles?
Yeah, no, they're very. The whole play changed entirely, and then changed back, and then T.R. Knight joined, and that's made this play really fun to do, because it's really had three distinct lives while I was there.
And Colm, the last time we spoke was about your novel Transatlantic. That mm-hmm. was just a couple of years ago.
Right.
You have a new one coming out?
I have a new one coming out in October called 13 Ways of Looking, which also comes out of a poem by Wallace Stevens, 13 Ways of Looking at a Blackbird.
Do you think of yourself as much as an American these days? Because so many of your books have been set here.
You know, I'm a New Yorker. If I'm anything, I'm a New Yorker. And then I'm an Irish New Yorker. And then after that comes the various passports down the line. But I live here, and I carry two passports, and one is green and one or purple, actually, because it's European, and one is blue because it's American. So I feel like a person of two countries, which is a good thing to be. I'm happy enough with that.
And since the Irish played such an important role in creating the culture of New York City and some other major cities in this country, to some degree, I'd imagine anybody who comes here still can feel quite comfortable.
Yeah, I think it's easy to feel. Well, New York, you know, anybody can come to New York and immediately be a New Yorker.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and we are the most diverse city in the world.
And there's many Irish people in New York, I think, as in Ireland, maybe. Or
probably more.
More, yeah. I mean, it's... And it was built by Irish people a lot, you know.
But your mother felt it was important to go back just to get a sense of the, that
she
connection?
Was Jewish, Russian. I don't know how we ended up there. My father was Irish, but we didn't even know his relatives. But Broderick is an Irish name, and I think. And because we never found anybody. But just always loved it since I was 8 years old, I think. 9 years old, that's when my parents. They just were visiting and then rented a house and then just kept going back.
It's interesting when you have that relationship with a country from a young age.
Yeah,
and it almost becomes more important than your home country in some ways.
Yeah, no, the people there, they age along with me. I go back and I see, and now there's the next generation, and then the one after that, and the older ones die, and I feel very, very part of it. Although I'm also away from it, it's strange.
Yeah. Well, we have an opportunity to celebrate William Butler Yeats' 150th birthday.
Yeah.
It's too bad he couldn't live all those years.
But the curious thing is that he does live. I mean, this is the beauty of poetry, I suppose, and the beauty of engaging in literature and in film or in any form of art is that it sort of gives you as many lives as you want to live. So people can go back to the words. I mean, I think Yeats was very interested in this too, his own immortality, his own, ability to still live on past his death. He has a very interesting, in the Circus Animals Desertion, he talks. I could read you a little
bit
quickly.
About
it. Yeah, it's those masterful images because complete grew in pure mind, but out of what began? A mound of refuse or the sweepings of a street, old kettles, old bottles and a broken can, old iron, old bones, old rags, that raving slut who keeps the till. Now that my ladder's gone, I must lie down where all the ladders start, in the foul rag and bone shop of the heart.
Mm. Wow.
Thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you.
To celebrate William Butler Yeats, I've been talking with Colin McCann and Matthew Broderick, and I'll tell you more about what they're doing on Monday right after this.